Hey y'all, it's Lauren. For years, Black people have been working on the ground and behind the scenes to create a better world for the next generation. We have seen a number of great activists over the years who challenged the status quo and promoted a more equitable society. I got the opportunity to sit down with one of those great activists, Ben Jealous, president of People for the American Way, a progressive advocacy organization created to fight extremism and restore democracy. He also formerly served as the president and CEO of the NAACP from 2008 to 2013. But where did this activist spirit come from, and how did he maintain a passion and drive for social justice? He says it's in his DNA.
So I'm a fifth generation member of the NAACP. The first generation of my family to join was my grandmother's grandfather, Edward David Bland. Born a slave in Virginia, and he died having served in the state legislature. He co-founded Virginia State University, and he built a movement of farmers, Black and white, whose singular achievement was preserving what was then the very new institution of free public education for every child in the state. They also, in addition to being the movement that brought us Virginia State University, they also were the movement that expanded Virginia Tech University, in each case to create universities for Black farmers and white farmers in the state. And in that family that had fought against slavery even when we were slaves, that in which my mom at 12 volunteered to be a plaintiff to sue the all-white girls' high school in Baltimore so one day she could be a student, and then desegregated that school when she was 15, and where my white father joined the civil rights movement when he was 15. And that family, being an activist, was just something we all did. Not necessarily the only thing you did. My grandma's granddad was also a farmer. He was a businessman. My grandmother's a social worker. My parents both ultimately operated small businesses, but it just was something that, well, as we say in church, to whom much is given, much is expected. That service is the rent we pay for the privilege of being here on earth. And, that's really was my foundation.
Ben had been taught by his ancestors the importance of activism and working toward change, but there was one prominent figure of the civil rights movement that showed him that anything is possible.
What prompted me to first get involved was the Jesse Jackson campaign in 1988. The notion that a fellow descendant of slaves could be president was exciting to me. What that would mean for our country and Jesse Jackson's vision for what he would do as president was compelling. I was 14 years old, and I organized a voter registration drive that registered thousands of people in our county. It was all student-led as part of that campaign, and I was hooked. And that's 34 years later, I'm still doing it. I was telling a friend the other day who knew me when I got kicked out of college for student protests at Columbia, first students kicked out in more than 20 years. I said to her, who knew that my unofficial college major would become my career? But here we are.
And he has been hitting the ground running ever since, addressing major social justice issues, including the Trayvon Martin case, voter ID laws, marriage equality, and the Affordable Care Act. Today, he continues to put in the work, and he hopes he can live up to the standard like the greats before him.
In a family like that, when those aren't just like the heroes in the family, like those are like your ancestors, that's your bloodline. You have high expectations for this country and a certain level of impatience when it feels like we aren't living up to our destiny. Frederick Douglass, my fellow Baltimorean, said when he was living that America's destiny was to be, quote, the most perfect example of the unity and dignity of the human family that the world had ever seen. That's a high goal. I believe, like Douglass, that we can get there. And like Douglass, I'm fully committed to being not just a leader in a particular movement, but an ally to all movements who share that goal.
The fight continues as Ben focuses on pushing President Biden to take a lead on voting rights. So in this episode, we hear more from Ben about the changing landscape of activism work, his excitement for events to engage with communities, and the legacy he wants to leave behind. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. Since the early and mid-2000s, we have seen social media platforms surge, and with that, we have been able to see more than ever before. The advancements in technology has created a new avenue for activist work.
I always ask, what can technology help us do better? When I was 26, the first time I asked that question in my career, I had just been made executive director of the National Newspaper Publishers Association, which is the federation of all the Black newspapers in the country. Come out of an activist Black newspaper in Mississippi called the Jackson Advocate. And at that point in 1999, there were only 8 Black newspapers publishing online. There are more than 200 Black newspapers in the country. Within a year and a half, we brought 40 of them on as a group and inspired 40 more, their competitors, to get there, you know, that if they weren't going to join us to be part of this collective, they were going to have to figure it out on their own. So in 2 years, we'd gone from 8 to 88 Black newspapers publishing online because of that campaign to digitize the Black press. When I came to the NAACP, we had less than 200,000 activists organized online. And literally the Washington Post was musing that Color of Change might replace the NAACP because they had 600,000 people organized online. When I left the NAACP as president 5.5 years later, we had 1.4 million activists on email, 430,000 on text. That was the largest text activist list outside the Obama campaign at the time. I believe Color Change was on the edge of getting to a million overall. And I took a lot of pride in that because we have to help not just evolve as activists, but also help our activist institutions evolve. In any given moment, there's a SNCC, or a Color of Change, or a Black Lives Matter, or a Black Panther Party, wherever you are in history, or Back to Africa movement, the NAACP in the forest of American activism post-Civil War is the big tree. It's the old, knotty, gnarled redwood. The big tree in a forest is what, at the end of the day, nourishes everything else. Fred Hampton trained in the NAACP. Governor Cargo, first Hispanic governor of New Mexico, Republican, white, trained in the NAACP. The now Legal Defense Fund, the Puerto Rican Legal Defense Fund, the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, all replicated on the model of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which came out of our old legal department, and the African National Congress was modeled on the NAACP 6 years after our founding. We were modeled on a movement against Irish occupation by the English that Frederick Douglass witnessed when he was an escaped slave touring Ireland for a year to earn the purchase price of his freedom. And he developed a relationship, a friendship, a bromance, we would say today, with an Irish Catholic priest who was building an anti-colonial movement on a penny a year membership. And his mass meetings became the model for the mass meetings we would make famous and Martin Luther King would sort of animate for the world. Martin Luther King, product of the NAACP. And so, you know, that's, but when you take over these old institutions, if you want them to thrive, you've got to figure out how we can do things better with technology. That was my first order of business of the Black press, first order of business of the NAACP.
What
What's different about the climate that we're in right now as it relates to civil rights and activism work, in regards to the pandemic, past the summer of 2020, the protests for George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and others? What's different about the climate now, if at all, in your opinion?
What's different is the length to which those who want to preserve the status quo are going to preserve it. The way in which they vilify activists and try to destroy their movements by destroying them. And the attacks on Black Lives Matter are nasty and mean-spirited. I'm not saying these young people are perfect, but neither are most politicians I know. What I would say is they have taken on, in the best American tradition, a great challenge, which is to end 400 years of inertia, not just racism, but authoritarian policing, which has been used to repress working people of all colors since the very beginning, since the Boston Massacre, right? Just look at the Boston Massacre. When John Adams defended the British redcoats who mowed down our fellow Americans in the streets of Boston, he derided the crowd as, in the words of the day, being blacks and poor whites, as if both were totally okay to kill. People that it's okay for the police to kill in the eyes of the establishment, if you will, are the same people that fill up our prisons. And when you go into our prisons, what you will see is that there are as many white men as there are black men on average across the country, as a number, not a percentage, but as the raw number, about a million of each. And 95% of them are too poor to afford their own lawyer. It's not okay. Their lives are just as valuable, just as precious as any other Americans. And Black Lives Matter, for example, has taken on ultimately the cause of saving all of their lives. And, by stopping the tradition of them being disposable that John Adams defended in his defense of the Redcoats. What they understand is that Black folks are the canaries in the coal mine. To make America safe for us, you make America safe for everybody. There's nothing more noble than that.
As Justice Speaks, the event is coming up. How beneficial is it to have events like that for the community to engage in? Why has that been something that you wanted to be a part of, this year?
I'm always down to support those who dedicate their lives to ensuring that all of us have access to justice. We may assume that our privilege ensures that we will never need the help of public servants who are there for the poor. But there, but for the grace of God, God go each of us. My grandmother's grandfather sent his children to the Tuskegee Institute and the Hampton Institute. He was a black man who had built a fortune. And then the Great Depression came, and my grandmother found herself at Virginia State University, the university that her grandfather had built for other people's children. Was the one that sustained his own grandchildren and made it possible for our family to pull out of the financial nosedive that we found ourselves in, combination of greed, stupidity, and racism, and just the fact it was the Great Depression. So, my grandma raised my mom in the public housing projects. My grandmother was raised on one of the largest Black-owned plantations in Virginia. It's easy. In America to fall very far, very fast. The people who protect the rights of the poor ultimately protect the rights of all of us.
Justice Speaks is an annual event from Legal Services of Eastern Missouri. This year, Ben Jealous is the keynote speaker as they celebrate their 65th anniversary, which will be held on November 6th. Up next, Ben talks about memories of the late Colin Powell, talks about his legacy and how to continue to fight in the midst of adversity. On the day of our interview, the news of Colin Powell's passing had just come out. Colin Powell is a former U.S. Secretary of State, the first Black U.S. Secretary of State, and a four-star general, amongst other accolades.
Colin was a good friend. He was a mentor. He was somebody that I could call whenever I was in a crisis. I spoke to him last 3 months ago. He was battling an illness, and it was clear he was a little weaker than you expected a great lion like Colin Powell to be. He always showed up, and with grace, with dignity, with a forcefulness of will to right great wrongs. He wasn't always perfect, not every man is, but he was a prince among men, and he was a public servant to the core.
With all of the work that you're doing now, what's kind of the next big thing that you're working on, whether it's philanthropy, activism, in education? What's next for you that you're, you know, excited about?
I'm proud to be president of People for the American Way. We are building a movement across this country to reform, transform public safety, working with mayors and city council people across the country, activists, clergy, deeply moved by the, excited by the work. And we're at the White House. Soon it'll be every single week with protests demanding that Joe Biden call on the Senate to do whatever it takes, create a carve out in the filibuster, whatever it takes to pass voting rights legislation now. There's nothing more sacred than our democracy, and every generation has a responsibility to step up. And I'm really proud that on November 3rd, we'll be joined by Martin Luther King's only grandchild, 13, Yolanda King, my daughter, who's 15, and a whole generation of young activists who have decided it's time for them to step up, because right now these states across the country are passing voter suppression laws that, when it comes to voting, are tying young people's hands behind their backs before they're even old enough to get into the ballot box. My grandma said, at some point you gotta figure out what's more important to you in life, being right or winning. Pessimists are right more often, but optimists win more often. Life is like a boxing match. It's 12 rounds. Most people call three data points a trend. The pessimist gets into the boxing ring in the first round and says, oh, I'm probably going to get knocked down. And you know what? They probably do get knocked down. And second round, same thing. Third round, same thing. Fourth round or fifth, they throw in the towel. The optimist gets into the ring and says, maybe this is the round I don't get knocked down. And they get knocked down, and they get in the ring the next time, in the next round, round two. Maybe this is it. And what they know is that there's 12 rounds, and all that's required to win the match is they simply have to be the last person standing in the 12th round. There's a lot of boxers who've won a lot of matches by absorbing every punch until their opponent is exhausted, and then just clobbering them in the 12th round. That's what it is to live as an optimist. And as a result, in my career, I've been blessed to help abolish the death penalty in 6 states in 5 years. I was president of the NAACP, help pass sweeping legislation, partnering with activist political leaders like Stacey Abrams in Georgia, that shrunk the Georgia penal system. Similar thing in Texas. Abolish the juvenile death penalty and the death penalty for people with low IQs completely in this country. And any number of other state level that passed in 1 year in Maryland, helped lead efforts to pass marriage equality, pass the DREAM Act, and abolish the death penalty. None of that would have happened if I hadn't made the choice every generation of mine has made in this family, as far as I can tell. Every generation of my ancestors has made. Which is simply to choose to win more often and not worry about being right all the time.
This show is produced by me, Lauren Brown. Director of On-Demand Content and Community Partnerships, Jade Harrell. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.